This is Game On. With your host, Zeke Williams.
Game On!
Let's get it cracking. 3 o'clock standing tall, feeling good here on a Thursday. Zeke Williams, Ari's back in the ones and twos. Plenty to get to today. Andy Isco is going to come in at about between 12 and 15 after. Also, dope at the bottom of the hour. Lighters up for that. Then the final go-round. I'm working. I'm efforting to get those G-Night tickets I promised you yesterday. My man back here, the marker, haven't seen him today to get confirmation. If I don't get him today after the first break, then we'll hook you up tomorrow. I'd rather do it today, give you time to get him before the game on come this weekend when they take on Edmonton. Edmonton's the team that spliced them 8-2, ran away with it, and a little payback deserved here by the Golden Knights. All right, thought I'd start you off with something different. How you doing, Ari?
I'm doing good. How about yourself?
Everything's good. Settled in.
Yeah.
You know, what's the most popular sport on the planet?
Soccer, right? For all intents and purposes, right?
Soccer, they put a poll together, and soccer won, basketball too. The NFL didn't do very well, okay? And keep this in mind. The NFL had a developmental league in Europe called NFL Euro, right? Mm-hmm. They had a professional league. It was their practice squad, basically. It used to be one in Europe where they had teams that played each other like they do in the NFL, like they do in college football, high school, whatever. It didn't do so well over there. Keep in mind, Roger Goodell has been trying to get across the pond, and he's been working. The Jaguars has been going over there the last 6 years, and they are now in a race across the pond against the NBA. Okay? That's going to be what we settle in on here as we start the show. So, look at the history of this. The NBA, basketball in general, is really starting to surge. College football, their rankings in the championship game, despite the fact that two SEC teams were in it, 9% hop from last year's game, which was a sensational game. This year's game, 9% higher in the ratings than it was last year. Nothing wrong with football. It's just that football is our sport. It's our national sport now. Baseball is our pastime, sure. But it's in the past. It's in the rear view. Right now, we want something fast and racy. And we understand football because we've seen it. We've seen teams have the kickoff, which they're taking a lot of out of right now because of where they're kicking it off from, their touchbacks, majority of them. But then you have first down, a huddle, second huddle, third huddle, punt if you don't move the chains. They don't too much care for that in London. Okay, the thing they like about our sports is you could bet on all of them. However, it's a situation where they're not used to the huddle. You don't see it in rugby, right? Rugby, these guys are going at it with no pads all the time. And it's a race across the pond now. Who's going to get there first? Will it be Adam Silver or Roger Goodell? The NFL, if you check them, they've been doing pretty well with their relationships over there. We mentioned NFL Europe League, right? Now, they've been going over to London since 2007, okay? And they named the teams that are going there next year in the matchups. So the Jaguars have been there 6 times already. Their owner wouldn't even mind moving his team over there, he said. Week number 6, the Seahawks will play the Raider home game. Week 7 or 8, the Eagles will play the Jaguars. This will be the Jags' number 6 time. Whichever Sunday does not feature the Eagles and Jaguars will be the Titans and the Chargers. Chargers lose a home game at StubHub. So that's your schedule for this coming season in the NFL over in London. Okay, the NBA just had a game in London. You say, when? Just finished. Started at noon, completed not too long ago. Okay? In that ball game, Boston 114, Sixers 103. I believe that's correct. Those are two up-and-coming teams. So they took a home game. I believe the Sixers were the home team and moved it over there. Adam Silver gets it. There was a talk about moving the G League, which used to be the D League, it's the minor leagues for the NBA, to Mexico City. Well, I'll tell you what, why not put them across the pond? Okay, you want some popularity? Let me give you a little history of the NBA and all the times they've been over across seas. Now, you got to go back to 1978. And this was the Washington Bullets, they were called back then. They played Maccabi in Israel. Okay? You know the place, right?
Maybe Maccabi.
Maccabi.
There you go.
Okay.
I'm useful for something.
Yeah. All right, bro. Correct me when I'm wrong.
There
Thank you.
Go. That's my people.
NBA has been to 18 countries, 45 cities, and they've played, coming into this date, 7 regular season games across seas. All right? In 2010, they had 3 games in London. These are the London games I'm naming. The Lakers were one of them. The Knicks were in one of them. In 2011, they had 2 games in London. And they also had 1 or 2 games, rather, in 2013. And then 14, 15, 16. All these, I could name every day. They've been in a city, China, Japan, you name it. They're everywhere. Brazil, like I said, overall, 18 countries, 45 cities, 7 regular season games. Now to 8 with the one today, with Boston winning over the Sixers. So the race across the pond is real. Who's going to get there and settle in first? I'm looking and trying to figure out how the NFL could do it and make it work. There's going to be some adjustments made. I mean, because you can't bring teams from the Southwest in the United States and fly them all the way across the United States and then across the pond for a regular season game, and it counts. So they're going to have to figure out what they're going to do there. The NBA, on the other hand, they can't do it either because you play more games than 1 a week. So you why not think about putting your own league over there or putting the G League over there? They want basketball everywhere. Basketball is the most popular sport that we like in the world. Soccer, if you're into soccer, if you're a soccer mom, soccer dad, I get it. I'm not a big fan of soccer. If a sport is where you have to do something differently other than use your feet, on the ground, on pavement or grass, and you can use your hands, to me, you added something or took away something from the sport. Hockey added something. They added ice, and it's very exciting and very fast and very racy and very catchy. Soccer doesn't do any of that for me at all. You can't even use your hands, and I'm not ripping the sport. It's just not for me. You a soccer guy?
Like, kind of. I'm similar to you in my opinion. But what's interesting is going back to the Israeli thing. That was our sport. Like, as a kid, I grew up. That's what my dad.
The one is that thing, right?
It's one of the few things my dad
did. You play
me
it?
Yeah, just I never, you know, like a little bit intramural leagues. I want to say when I was probably like 12 is when it kind of started to fall to the wayside. And then I really, personally, I got into basketball. That's just me. I really loved the sport. I still do. I'm short. And freshman year of high school, I, you know, made like the first round of the tryouts, but that's as far as it ever got. And I got smoked by this kid that ended up in a D1 school for, you know, for like the point guard position. But yeah, so me personally, I'm an interesting circumstance. But yeah, a lot of people like me and people that grew up like me, you know, we grew up on soccer. That was everything. I still probably have
it.
Little trophies or what have
yep.
you and pictures and stuff.
When I was a kid, I played it back when I was in middle school and loved it. Okay, when you're a kid playing it, it's one thing, but, you know, watching the sport as a fan in my adulthood after...
It's long.
It's just slow. It's slow to me because they don't score enough.
Yeah.
Indoor soccer is the nuts. Oh, my God. Indoor soccer where they can hit the ball off the walls,
yeah.
The rim shots. I could sit and watch that for a very long time, but I can't watch it on a field where they're running back up and down the field and nobody's scoring, man.
Yeah, it gets really... I agree with you.
Too many people on the field.
I will say one thing, regardless of how boring it may be to us, the skill level I will definitely get.
Oh, absolutely.
Them. Like, to that, and that's probably why I like basketball more, because you get to use your hands
uh-huh.
and be reasonable and actually do things. Yeah, it was just too much.
You don't have the handles. You have the feet soles.
Exactly.
Or the footsies or whatever you want to call it. Any other one. So the situation is, who's going to make it across the pond first? Will it be the NBA or will it be the NFL? I think the NFL is going to lose this battle. And I only say that because I think the NBA is situated because of the popularity of basketball to do their thing. And that's what we're looking at right now. On top of it all, I don't know if basketball will ever be more enjoyable to watch than football to me. That I don't know. But I know this. Last night was pretty fun. Okay, you had a night where the party was on for KD. KD was about to get his 20,000 points. He was going to be one of the, I believe, the third youngest player of all time to get to 20,000 points. But guess what? He was upstaged by Lou Williams.
Here comes Lou Williams. I need some real heroics from him. Nice start. Gringo, three ball by Lou. Sweet Lou had to change the shot en route. Did so beautifully. Gets the goal. Slot. Got to get it going now. Over Caspi. Gringo! A well-challenged three-pointer. 30 seconds to go. Lou says, why not? Bingo! His first 50-point game in his career.
Lou Williams getting busy. How about that? 50 points. Are you talking about tearing it up? I mean, he had a day. Lou Williams, 50 points, 2 rebounds, 7 assists. Lou Williams also had 34 points, 3 rebounds and 4 assists in their game Monday against Atlanta in a 108-107 loss. Remember, Griffin is down right now. He's injured. So it's a situation where Lou Williams has been taken over. He started the last two games, and he's gotten off 50 and 34 in his last two games. And the Warriors came out to play, but Lou Williams spoiled the party. Kevin Durant did get to 2,000. He had 40. Four. Check him on his record.
Warriors, come out to play. Warriors,
come out. Is KD going to get to 20,000 in the first half? There it is. They need to put that on the big board. The 44th man in NBA history, second youngest to do it, 25 in the first half, 20 grand in terms of points for Kevin Durant.
So there you have the victory by the Clippers. The Clippers get the win 125 to 105 over the Dubs. 33-9 now are the Dubs, 19-21 the Clippers, and they did this without Griffin there. Star. And Lou Williams, a journeyman, 31 years old, cut by teams. All of a sudden now he's like, you know what? You're 31, you're balling. You still got handles. He's a shooting guard. Guess what? I could get this, right? I got this. That's what he's thinking. So you know what? He got this. You gonna question him? 34. And then you back it with a 50-point outing. Highest, of course, of his career. I mean, I'm impressed. I root for guys that are basically a long-shot story. And that's what Lou Williams is. So congrats to the Clippers. Congrats also to KD, although the party was spoiled. Talk about a party crasher. KD got his 20,000 point, had 40 in it, but didn't get the win. This guy's a winner. He gets to win all the time. His name is Andy Esco, Logical Approach. What's up, brother?
Well, see, it depends upon what kind of win we're talking about as far as all the time. Maybe waking up in the morning is going to be considered a win that occurs all the time.
I would say that's a victory, right, daily?
Usually it is, yes.
Well, we were talking about that game last night. Pretty fascinating when you have a guy like Lou Williams, a journeyman, 31 years of age. He had 34 points Monday against Atlanta in a one-point win. Then he comes back, spoils the party up in Arco, as he dropped 50 on the Dubs, and KD got his 20,000, but they lost the game.
Well, they were shorthanded, and so it's not all that much of a surprise that Golden State would lose. Perhaps the magnitude of the loss, again, not totally a surprise because, again, though the Warriors, they know they're the best team in the league. They know that they are going to win the number one seed, and every so often perhaps they'll take games off. And when you're shorthanded without a guy like Curry and what Thompson, I think, was out as well, that their performance is not going to be at peak level. And keep in mind, again, that even if it's at home, every opponent is going to be gunning to take down the Golden State Warriors. And, you know, the Warriors had just beaten the Clippers by a nice amount several weeks ago. And so not surprising that we saw a good effort out of the Clippers. The 50 points from Lou Williams, yeah, that's a bit of a surprise. I wouldn't read all that much into it. Although, once again, you know, without Chris Paul this year, the Clippers have taken some time to gel and go through the transition of adjusting to life on the basketball court without their leader for the last several seasons. Several seasons that, of course, have been a disappointment as far as Clipper fans are concerned. There have been higher expectations over the last few years. So don't know how much to read into the win last night, but certainly they have to take some comfort out of it. And as far as the Warriors go or the Warriors fan, wouldn't think much of it at all.
Andy Isco, Logical Approach here on the show, Game On. Let's look at the number 2 and 3 teams in the Eastern Conference. They do battle tonight across the border up north, Toronto. Toronto and Cleveland. And Cleveland, a slight favorite in this ball game. The total is somewhere around 220, 222. Your thoughts about this matchup?
Yeah, it's a short line. A lot of it... perhaps even you might have been able to make a case for the Raptors to be favored, but they're going to again be shorthanded tonight. The injury reports for Toronto suggest that DeMar DeRozan is probable and that Kyle Lowry is doubtful, and of course Serge Ibaka is going to be out now due to the suspension. He'll be returning in a couple of days when the Warriors are playing the Raptors. So I can understand why Cleveland is favored, but they've not been a very sharp team, especially as a favorite. They have a bad record away from home over the past month and a half. So I'd be reluctant to lay the points, but again, with Toronto shorthanded, not sure I want to take even a small number of points. And maybe the small number of points could be that the small line in this game is reflective of Cleveland's recent performance on the road and also reflective of the fact that Toronto will be shorthanded. If I were going to play the game, I'd reluctantly take the points with Toronto simply because Cleveland is just not playing at the level that we know they will play with when the playoffs come around.
You're absolutely correct, and it scares you to put money on them because you don't know when they're going to pop up and start balling again when they put that streak together where they had double-digit victories in a row. But at the same time, they could still be in that up-and-down slump, which has mostly been down. It is a small line. The circle on the game is 2.5. A 3 I see at William Hill, but most importantly, you know, just, yeah, like you said, be careful investing your money right now on LeBron and his boys because they just haven't been very consistent at all.
Yeah, the line actually opened, and I think it was last night when we pretty much knew the status of Toronto's injuries. Not injuries because of the suspensions, but the Lowry situation was pretty much established. And this line opened at 4, and actually those movements, you know, you talked to 2.5, have been recent. So for much of the day, it was actually 3, 3.5. So the late action coming into this 5:05 start that has started seems to be coming in on the home underdog. And often, and I can also say that there's been some success to it. When the line starts coming down from a number like 3.5 to 3 to 2.5, maybe instead of taking the points with Toronto, you just go ahead and take them on the money line.
There's two other games left, of course. The one game in the books, Boston and Philadelphia across the pond. The Clippers and Sacramento. We'll see if Lou Williams can drop another 50. He's got the Kings, a team that is not known for their defense. Clippers a slight favorite in this ballgame, a low number, and the total about 210 and a half.
Yeah, I might have felt a little more comfortable playing the Clippers tonight had they come off a loss against Golden State, even if it was a competitive loss. They might be, I won't say celebrating a little bit, but they might not have the same focus, the same intensity playing at Sacramento as they would have if they were coming in there off of what was still an expected loss last night. At the same time, given this is effectively a pick'em game, I'm seeing mostly Clippers minus one. Not sure I want to take that small number with Sacramento, so I did not even consider playing this game after the events last night.
All right, we'll back you off now. Go back to L.A. It'll be San Antonio and the Lakers. You know, it'll be nice when the Lakers become at least something of what we're used to seeing in that organization, a team that's competitive, that's fierce. We see the stars that are jumping at us now. When that happens, it'll be fun because when you get these kind of matchups right now, it doesn't really excite you because the Lakers aren't who we used to know them as. San Antonio, on the other hand, now you've got your guy Kawhi Leonard injured again. They're 2.5-point favorites out in Los Angeles at Staples, and a total about 211.5.
Yeah, one thing we're seeing in the NBA, we're seeing it more and more in recent years, and it seems actually to be accelerating despite the wishes of the league, is we're seeing more and more teams rest multiple players on given nights. And we're seeing that here tonight because obviously Leonard is out with an injury. Tony Parker and Danny Green are both listed as out for tonight's game, so that's why that number seems as low as it is. And, of course, even Rudy Gay is out indefinitely, so that also affecting the Spurs' depth somewhat. So the question is, do you want to take the Lakers? I'm not sure I could take the Lakers over 48 minutes. If I were going to do something, if I wanted to make a case that, gee, where is this shorthandedness going to affect the Spurs? Might affect them with the players they have on the court in the first half where the Lakers figure to be their freshest. So if I were to look at this game, and I haven't, and I'm not going to play it, I'd be looking to play the Lakers, if anything, in the first half, but not for the full game.
You know, for the Lakers, they have a lot of young talent, very good young talent, in fact. We'll see what they do. But I think a lot of people were under the impression that LeBron James, when he leaves this year, coming that he's a free agent, unrestricted, he could go wherever he wants, that he'll be looking at L.A., and in particular, the Lakers. I don't know if that's still as much to be the case right now with the situation with LaVar Ball and the way he's interrupting that team with things he said about Luke Walton and company. It may be a block, or we'll see what happens with that, Andy.
A lot can happen between now and the time that free agency begins in July, so I wouldn't really read much into anything at all. Makes for good copy, makes for good debate, makes for good discussion, but as far as having any real impact, things don't really matter until he's eligible to walk and decides what to do.
All right, let's go to the grids. This weekend, we've got some pretty good ball games. Divisional weekend play in the NFL is the best because you're going to have the late game on Saturday night. You've got two games each day, and these are down to the last of the best. You got your best four teams going at it now, and then your next two the following week before the bye week and the Super Bowl. So I'll start you off with Atlanta, Philadelphia. Of course, everyone knows Philadelphia has everything working for them, except they don't have Carson Wentz. They have Foles. And I mean everything. Their defense, their special teams, their offensive line, their running game now. Ajayi, I mean, everything that they want, they have, except they don't have their starting quarterback, who more than likely would have been the MVP before going down with the injury, the ACL tear. On the other hand, Atlanta, a team that showed some urgency and desperation in L.A. against the Rams, and they looked about as good as they could look on defense last week. So going into this game, Andy, with Atlanta, a road field goal favorite, about 41.5 to 42 on the total, what do you see here?
Yeah, you mentioned it at the very top, and that is that this could be the best weekend of football each year, certainly many people consider, because the winners of these four games now get to play for the right to advance to the Super Bowl next week. So very important games, obviously. The four best teams, or at least the two best teams in each conference, according at least to the seedings, the ones who, and that, of course, is earned, are coming off rests. And that's normally a nice advantage, especially when you're getting teams that just won a wild card game. In the case of Jacksonville and New Orleans, they won at home. In the case of Atlanta and Tennessee, they both won on the road. As far as Philadelphia goes, you know, this team was 13-2 after 15 games. They had that throwaway game against Dallas in Week 16 when they had already clinched the number one seed. That was the only home game that Philadelphia lost this year. They've won the other seven. Their two losses were both on the road at Kansas City, and I'm trying to recall the other one, Carolina, I believe. It may have been. No, I'm sorry. They won at Carolina. I have to check the one that they, the other game they lost at home, on the road, rather. Now, Nick Foles, he has the experience. He took him to the playoffs a few years ago before leaving and playing in, Kansas City and others, et cetera, coming back to Philadelphia. The problem he had early three games that he started, but he didn't really play much in the final game. The two games that he played, he didn't play terribly against the Giants, did not do all that much in the Monday night, the Christmas night game against Oakland. But the problem was that he had only two or three days to prepare with the receivers, work out the timing. Now with the week off, I think we'll see a better effort out of Nick Foles. He'll be more prepared. He'll be more in sync with the receivers, etc. But the key to me for Philadelphia here is that they got the number one seed not just based on the play of quarterback Carson Wentz. To be the number one seed, to be 11-2 when they got injured in the game against the Rams and 13-2 at the end of 15 games, suggests and says in this case specifically, yeah, you're getting contributions from your D defense. You're getting contributions from the running game. You're getting contributions from special teams. So Philadelphia is more than just Carson Wentz. Did he have a major, perhaps the major reason behind the success? Obviously, he had a major reason. Whether it was the major reason, that could be somewhat debatable, although much of it revolves around him. So I think that there's a bit of an overreaction here in everybody falling in love with Atlanta, whom I'm still not all that impressed with. They struggled down the stretch, settling for field goals instead of touchdowns in their last couple of games. And even last week, they had all the benefits from the poor special teams play of the Rams, a couple of fumbled punts, etc. They could have been up much more than they were when they had that 13-0 lead. Once again, the offense has not been as sharp as it was last year. The defense played very, very well. You wonder how much it had to do with perhaps the nerves of the young players on the Rams getting into the playoffs for the first time. Maybe it had more to do with that special teams play than it did perhaps nerves, although it contributed to it. So I think Atlanta was not as good as a lot of people think that they were last week due to the circumstances. They should have had more points than they did. And the Rams even made a bit of a challenge late. Of course, once again, Dan Quinn, the head coach of the Falcons, why he didn't go for two when they were up 26-13 in the fourth quarter after scoring that, I think it was in the fourth quarter when they scored that touchdown to make it 25-13. You know, whether you're up 26-13 or 27-13 really doesn't matter when your opposition needs two touchdowns. Rams score twice, make 1-point conversions, extra point conversions. All of a sudden, they've got 27 points, and Atlanta is stuck with 25 as they were, or 26 when they went for the one and made it, instead of the 27 that had they been successful on the 2-point conversion. So, again, some questionable coaching. Even at the very end, when there was that pass that the Rams made, that extended a drive, a fourth down pass, it was questionable. They didn't challenge. They had three timeouts left that they likely weren't going to need to use, and yet they managed to find a way not to see the wisdom in making the challenge, because it did the play was before the 2-minute warning, so the coaches still had to throw the flag if they wanted to. So I think Philadelphia also has a coaching advantage in this game. I played the Eagles plus the 3, played them on the money line.
You got them final score?
20-16. I think it's going to be a low-scoring game. I do like what I've seen out of Atlanta's defense this year. They did play well last week, but maybe not as well as they should have played given the Rams. Although the Rams had a lot to do with it, but they've been a consistently improved defensive team over last year. In fact, I would say that the improvement that the decline that I saw in the Falcons' offense this year was almost compensated for by the improvement in their defense.
2016, your final score, Andy Isco, has the Eagles over Atlanta. By the way, the Eagles, their other two losses, they lost to Dallas, as you mentioned, 6-0. But the other two were road losses, Seattle and Kansas City.
Seattle was the other one. I remember that one. That was because I remember that game was a good spot for Seattle, and that was the one where I said that I felt that the Eagles would win one of the two games on the road. They'd probably lose at Seattle and win at the Rams the next week, and pretty much that one went that way. So, yeah, the two losses that had any meaning this year were on the road. The last loss to Dallas, you know, meaningless.
Right. Okay, let's go to Foxborough, where, you know, you're going to have to go through there if you're in the AFC. You almost know that Tennessee's going to try to make it through there after surviving in their last game. So New England here, and that was a great game, by the way, that Kansas City-Tennessee game. Too bad for Alex Smith and company down in Arrowhead, because they just can't seem to win a playoff game. New England having no problems there. They're almost double-digit favorites in this ballgame. The total's up pretty high too, Andy.
Well, they are. They're 13.5-point favorites over Tennessee. And, in fact, I can almost lump the Tennessee, New England, and the Jacksonville, Pittsburgh games together because of the following. And that is, if you handicap based on statistics, you can make a case for both Jacksonville and Tennessee. Tennessee is very good in running the football. They are excellent in defending the run. They allow about 3.5 yards per rush, which is outstanding these days in the NFL. New England has some issues defensively, even though their defense over the second half of the season, even statistically, was much improved over their first 8 games when the Patriots struggled, especially those first 4 games. So the statistics could make you say that you've got a good case for Tennessee, just like they could for Jacksonville with the defensive numbers for Jacksonville, especially the sacks, etc. Of course, that game, I'll mention more about that one in a moment, is a revenge game for the Steelers. On the other hand, if you handicap on the basis of matchups, if you handicap on the basis of physical comparison, potential, etc., then you're probably looking at both New England and Pittsburgh. So the statistics point to both underdogs. The fundamentals, the experience, etc., point to both favorites. In the first game, the Tennessee game, I actually like what I've seen out of Tennessee because their ability to run the football and their ability to defend the run has had them play in many close games. Now, Tennessee considered maybe even more so than Buffalo the weakest team to make the playoffs this year. They were 9-7 in the regular season. And a lot of their statistics are negative. They were outgained in total yards. They were outscored on the season. I want to say maybe 57 points, something like that comes to mind. But a lot of that had to do with two of their one-sided losses this year. I want to say it was a 40-17 loss to Pittsburgh and a 57-14 loss to the Houston Texans when Deshaun Watson was playing. So those two results obscured a lot of the fine things that Tennessee did. Of course, you have to keep in mind Tennessee was 8-4. After 12 games and ended up dropping the next three, needed to win the final week to get into the playoffs. New England, we know what we're going to get with New England. They were a double-digit favorite in this round last year against a shorthanded Houston team that had just beaten the Raiders the week before in a wild card game, and they blew them away covering a 16-17 point spread. I think they won by, I don't want to say, I think that it was 18 points. I want to say 34-16, something like that. I think New England wins this game. I'd prefer to take the points. Going to wait to see if it goes back up to 14, as it might. In the Pittsburgh-Jacksonville game, that was the game that Jacksonville won 30-9. It was the game that Roethlisberger had the five interceptions, two of which were returned for touchdowns. But if you recall that game, that was a defensive game. At halftime, Jacksonville led 7-6. In the third quarter, Pittsburgh scored to take a 9-7 lead, and then all hell broke loose, and the interceptions occurred, and a 30-9 rout looks like a one-sided Jacksonville win. In fact, statistically, Pittsburgh had a solid statistical edge in that game in terms of yardage, yards per play, etc., both offensively and defensively. And so in this game, I'm going to overlook the Jacksonville's edge defensively because Pittsburgh, for the most part, for a good part of that game, was able to handle Jacksonville. Roethlisberger uncharacteristically made those mistakes. I don't expect he makes it again. I do have some concerns about Pittsburgh. We talk about Le'Veon Bell and the great running attack that he provides. Well, actually, this year, the Pittsburgh offense, amongst the 12 teams to make the playoffs, ended up with just 104 rushing yards per game, which is the lowest of the 12 teams in that made the playoffs, including, obviously, the 8 teams remaining right now. So that Pittsburgh game, not as strong as a lot of people expected it to be or perhaps even perceive it to be. At the same time, we don't know 100% health for Antonio Brown, but that experience edge that the Steelers have over Jacksonville. I'm not going to use the revenge motive as any sort of factor in this game. You don't need revenge when you're in the NFL playoffs. You're playing to make it to the Super Bowl. So a minor factor that some people might consider, I don't consider it at all. Again, if the Jacksonville Jaguars play to their statistics, leading the league in rushing this year on offense, tremendous defense, well, they have a chance to stay close, perhaps even pull the upset. But I think the experience of Roethlisberger compared to that of Blake Bortles, who had a few good three-game stretch late in the season, didn't play well the last two regular season games and was horrible last week against Buffalo. I think ultimately if Pittsburgh's able to get out to a lead, which I think they'll be able to do, force the Jaguars and Bortles to play from behind, I think that's where Bortles' mistakes come into play.
Absolutely. Andy Esco, Logical Approach here on the show, Game On. Give us a final score in that game where the Steelers are 7-7.5, 41. And then give us one on New England where they're 13-13.5, 47.5.
I have Pittsburgh winning their game 24-13. So that would also look towards an under in that game. I believe the New England-Tennessee game will be a high-scoring game. I've got New England winning, but just 31-23. So I take the points there, and I played over the total in that one.
And then you've got a real good matchup. You know, I guess the last two games are the ones I'm really looking at. And licking my chops. I want to see Jacksonville in that revenge matchup with Pittsburgh. Well, you mentioned the five picks from Roethlisberger. They also put him to the turf five times his sacks. So then you got the Saints and the Vikings. This one, the other game I just can't wait to see, where Minnesota's 4.5-46. We know about their defense. Case has just been unbelievable. A journeyman pops up. You got two other quarterbacks, Bridgewater coming off the ACL tear, which he's starting to get better. And then, of course, Bradford, who You know, hey, stay with Case Keenum. And we know about the kid doing his thing down in the bayou, right? Drew Brees, nothing like him.
No, this is the, I think, the most compelling matchup, because you can make a case for both Minnesota and New Orleans. They did meet in the opening week of the season. In fact, part of that first Monday night doubleheader, and the Saints won 29-19. A little bit more dominant, or a little bit more in control than that final score. The Saints scored 10 points in the fourth quarter to close the gap a little bit. Minnesota clearly the better team, but a lot has changed since then. In that game, Sam Bradford was at quarterback for the Vikings, and Dalvin Cook, the fine rookie running back out of Florida State, was in the backfield, and he got off to a great start before he was injured four games or so into the season. Of course, Bradford went down. Case Keenum came in, played tremendously well over the stretch of games that he played for the balance of the season, and you're not hearing much about it, but he certainly should be in the conversation for league MVP. He won't win it, but he certainly should be right up there with what he's done with a Vikings team that over the last few years has been known largely, if not exclusively, but certainly largely for its defensive play under Coach Mike Zimmer. And so Mike Zimmer has been the better's best friend since coming back or coming over to the Vikings as head coach after being defensive coordinator at Cincinnati for a number of years. In his four seasons, the Vikings 44 wins, 20 losses, and one push ATS. That's over 67%, almost 69%. And you've just been making money with him even again this year with their great record, 13-3, 11-4-1 against the spread, which is an indication of a team that's being not only well prepared before the game starts, but also well able to make adjustments, let's say, in games or at halftimes. New Orleans, a bit of a surprise this year compared to expectations, but you know, we've known that the talent is there for a number of years. The big difference, their defense has improved this year, and that's got a lot to do with the running game. I mentioned there were changes since the start of the season. Adrian Peterson was there with Mark Ingram when the season started. Saints let him loose several weeks into the season. Alvin Kamara, the I don't know if it'll be unanimous, but perhaps it should be, rookie of the year this year, took his place and had a bang-up season as a rookie. And then when you consider what the running game has done, giving Drew Brees balance on offense with a rushing game to go with his passing attack, it's enabled to do two things to the defense. Number one, it's taking pressure off the defense. The defense doesn't have to show improvement because now the offense can have extended drives, which also means that the defense isn't going to be three and out right back on, either three and out due to the Saints offense, or more often than not, quick scores by the offense and the defense comes back on the field. So those factors have combined for improved performance out of the New Orleans defense. My preference in this game, however, is to like the Minnesota Vikings. And that game opened at a number of places as 3.5. Earlier today, I heard reports, I wasn't in front of the screen all day, but I heard that it got up as high as 5.5. Wow. When it gets up to 5.5, you're almost waiting to see if it gets to 6, and then the wise guys come in and take the 6. But I did not see that at all. I'm seeing now mostly 4.5. There's one place that has a 4 minus 20 still on the Saints. I've not seen that one move, but 5 seems to be 4.5 and 5 seems to be the prevailing numbers. I've got Minnesota winning this game. I think the defense ultimately takes charge, is able to figure out Brees and the Saints. Now, it's a little bit different situation than last week when the Saints had a nice lead and Carolina was able to get some points. I don't think that on the road New Orleans will be able to get out to the kind of lead they did at home last week against Carolina. And again, that Minnesota defense, a solid running game, and more than capable quarterbacking out of Case Keenum, even though he's inexperienced in the playoffs. I like Mike Zimmer as coach. I've got the Vikings to win 31-20, which also puts that game over the total, because I do think New Orleans will get some points. Just think Minnesota will get more of them.
Andy Isco, Logical Approach. Let the folks know, Andy, where they can find you, my friend.
I've got daily matchups now at this time of the year for both college and pro basketball, in addition to, well, we had them for college football, now for the remainder of the NFL season, weekly matchup statistics on my website, thelogicalapproach.com. And I can also be found in the pages of Gaming Today, which is now available on Tuesday morning, now that the holiday schedule is over, at many of the sports books around town. So I currently have columns on the NBA and the NFL, where you can read more of my thoughts and my reasoning behind the recommendations I just made for all four of these divisional round games.
Always a pleasure, my bro. Great work as usual.
Thank you, Seed. Enjoy the rest of the games this week, and hope you're on the right side more often than not.
Same here. Andy Isco, Logical Approach here on the show, Game On. We're going to step away. Lighters up when we get back. Dope is next.
man. I've been saving for a special occasion.
Like a quarter pounder, man. Let's
blow. Be careful with that, man. Is it heavy stuff, man? Will it blow me away?
It's time now for Man, That Show Is Dope.
3:45 in the valley. Lighters up. Pass it. Not everyone was happy with the Golden Globe Awards, huh? Oprah was very inspirational there. And she told girls watching the ceremony, it's a new day. It's on a new horizon. And if you're a victim of sexual assault, you got to tell somebody, okay? It led to the TV broadcaster to run for president in 2020 is what people are calling for. Well, not everyone, especially artist Thiel. Okay.
Who?
Thiel.
I'm just playing.
Who was the hot chick he used to date or was married to?
Not Giselle. What is it?
She was hot. Or yes. Yeah, anyway, we'll look her up later. All right. Here's what he, I guess, sent out on Twitter. Oh, I forgot. That's right. You'd heard the rumors, but you had no idea he actually serially was assaulting young Sty Art actresses when you turned an idea, hey, and what you were getting into. My bad. What's that word?
Oh, sanctimonious.
Sanctimonious. Hashtag sanctimonious Hollywood. Okay, so he's referring to Harvey Weinstein. And he's saying that Oprah knew that Harvey Weinstein was sexually assaulting women over the years and decades, and she never spoke out. Well, nobody spoke out, Seal. People were concerned about their jobs, their careers. Look at what happened to the women that were on Fox, and every woman that was an anchor on Fox, CNN, any other network, right? NBC,
yeah, true.
That came forward. They don't have a job anymore. They had to take the settlement and leave the industry, period. Okay? They got to do something else. They can't be in broadcasting. Part of their settlement deal is take the money, and we'll settle with you, but you have to sign this agreement. You can't work here, or you can't work in any other network until such and such time. Okay, that's my settlement with you, lady. Now get out of my face and stay in your lane. Right? So Oprah's no better than any other person. Oprah didn't come forward because of the same reasons no one else came forward. So Seal, I'm telling you, get a facelift. Let it go, dope.
Wow. Wow. Heidi Klum, first of all, is the ex.
That's the girl?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I like some of your music, Seal. Here's my thing. Quite simple. You're right. Everybody's, you know, everybody knew whatever. Seal, if you knew this, how many years ago? Like, all of a sudden, Oprah's front and center. Oprah's been relevant a lot longer than you, buddy. So why didn't you say something
Thank
then?
Thank you.
You know, like if it's such a big deal.
You knew
why
too,
do you wait
buddy.
Till, exactly.
Thank you very kindly.
Why do you wait till now to make the point? Is that also a way for you to get yourself back into relevancy? I don't really think that's his intention. I think he's really genuine about it. I just think it's ridiculous.
Who
it's
are
just
we talking about?
Seal.
Oh,
right?
Okay.
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
It's very sanctimonious. That's right. What was that? We learned the word today. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, he's kind of a dope. I appreciate where he's going with it, but come on. And Oprah, you know what? If that's the worst thing you can say about her, then that's okay. I'll take that L because everything else she does, she's one of the most, I mean, philanthropic hey. People in the world. She is on pace. I mean, she's
or
everything.
You could drop that comment on everybody in Hollywood because everybody knew. Who didn't know?
Yeah.
Everybody knew. Okay?
Yeah. So thank you very kindly. I agree with that. All right, over onto the UK where I get all my good stories. There is a butcher named Chris McCabe, 70 years old, father of four, and he got locked in a walk-in freezer at his job. Now, you know, these things have emergency buttons. There's like an emergency release button. It was frozen, ironically. So here's the funny thing. The story comes up before I actually read it, and it says, black pudding saves man's life. Okay. So I'm thinking like, oh, wow, he was stuck in this freezer, and he was able to survive by eating this black pudding.
Right.
totally not the case. He was locked in the freezer. It stores meat at negative 20 Celsius degrees, which is negative 4 degrees Fahrenheit.
Oof.
And so, you know, he's looking around trying to figure it out. Time is running out. He said, you know, the lamb wasn't going to work. This wasn't going to work. And he found this black pudding, which in the picture, it almost looks like a big salami. Like it's a cylinder, about maybe, 2 feet long and circular shape. So it's basically like almost like a bat.
Right.
It's the perfect thing. So he just rammed.
And it was frozen.
He used it like, exactly, totally frozen.
Ah.
So he used it like a battering ram and just kept smashing that thing until it unfroze enough to hit the button.
Otherwise, he dies.
Yeah, definitely. There was no one around one of those kind of situations. And then he said that he's been locked in there. People get locked in there all the time, but that's, you know, the emergency release button, and then you're out. I've been in walk-in freezers before. They're scary like that, but it's usually you just have to push a little, you know, use two hands or whatever, and you're out. So... so that was a pretty dope story to me. The black pudding did save his life.
Nice. Good for black
Mr.
pudding.
McCabe, you are,
that is
you
dope.
Are dope.
This right here is another dope. Okay, and we'll close it out on this one. Minneapolis, or I should say Minnesota, Gopher basketball player Reggie Lynch. Have you heard the story? Okay, well, he denies the allegations of sexual assault against him by not two now, but I understand now it's three women. Okay, he actually is finally suspended from the team. And these allegations came down in less than a week. WCCO in Minneapolis, they give you the story here. Give a listen.
A standout for the University of Minnesota basketball team is appealing a decision to suspend him and ban him from campus until 2020. A new report says Reggie Lynch was accused of sexual assault at his dorm room at Roy Wilkins Hall in April of 2016. 10 days later, in a separate incident, he was arrested on suspicion of raping a 19-year-old woman. He did not face criminal charges in that case, but was briefly suspended. The new investigation from the Office of Equal Opportunity found the Edina native guilty of violating the school's sexual misconduct policy. As a result, Lynch was suspended. Kate Raddatz found why he's still allowed to participate in some school activities. Kate?
I stand corrected in the story. Two women in 10 days, not 1 week, but you got two allegations and two sexual assault cases from two different women who claim you sexually assaulted them within a 10-day period.
That's something to talk about, yeah.
He led the nation in blocks last year, by the way. He's a very good player, but he's a dope. All right. Lighters down. We'll keep it right here. We're going to that final go-round right now. We're going to do the Rebel giveaway. I never saw Marcus the Marker, so we'll have to do the Golden Knight Edmonton Oiler giveaway tomorrow. Today we'll give away UNLV San Diego State coming up on the 27th. There's Marcus just walking in the building. We'll do the hockey tomorrow, though, so you stick around for that. I want to say thanks to Andy Esco, also to Ari.
Hey,
yes.
Hey.
What do you call yourself?
We don't have time for all this, but Token.
We call what? It's music.
Some people that
respect
me. It's
labeled Token. Yeah. I respect you.
I
Token's
know.
All good.
You're
but I got you put a couple of CDs together for me for some dates.
Yes.
And I got to say, the first one went off really well. The second one, not bad either.
Okay.
So I'm Seed Williams, folk. Remember, keep your chins tucked low, guards up high. We'll see you on the radio. More of the show tomorrow. Right now, caller number 5 at 702-365-9200. Keep it right on NBC Sports Radio 920. Game on. Game over.